Welcome, welcome to Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Joining me today is Becca. How are you?
Doing well. How are you, Sam?
Fantastic. And I believe this is your third now appearance, or fourth? I'm bad at counting.
I'm pretty sure it's a third.
Third. All right. Nathan, how you doing?
Good.
All right. So today we're going to continue on with our gritty reboot series about talking about topics that we've done early in the early days, sort of establishing why Ask an Atheist exists and why it's why we talk about the things that we talk about. And today we're talking about humanism versus atheism and the differences thereof. I know I've often said on the show that, you know, for me, atheism isn't really a statement of belief. If you want to know about, if you want to talk about where my morals come from, atheism really isn't the thing that we need to talk about.
Well, correct. I mean, atheism is not a worldview, and I tell this to many people whenever they ask about it or when the subject comes up. It's really just a single position on one question, and it doesn't really tell you a lot about any of the other beliefs that are out there. So,
right.
Well, right. I get this a lot. People ask me why I said atheist instead of humanist whenever I was asked by Wolf Blitzer if I thank the Lord and everything. And I'm like, well, you know, the question that he was asking had to do with that one thing.
Right.
Right. Do you or do you not believe in a God? But like whenever it comes to moral values and like assertive claims about anything I actually think, I find myself talking about humanism and not actually talking about atheism at all.
Well, I normally hate using dictionary definitions to describe something in the context of the show, but I think this is an exception where I think it's acceptable.
You know, I want to say real fast that the moment you said humanism versus atheism, I hear Mortal Kombat. I'm like, okay, so now
that's precisely what I was thinking when I wrote it down. But the dictionary.
So now, fight.
Yes, fight.
Here we go.
Well, the dictionary definition is the disbelief or lack of belief in the existence of God or gods. And in the terms of Ask an Atheist, and when we talk about what atheism actually means, I shorten it to what I call the two-word definition, which is no God. And that's, as far as I'm concerned, the beginning and the end of it.
Right.
I'm in agreement with you there. I don't think that atheism is an assertive claim of any kind other than specifically saying no deities. That's it.
No, yeah. And I think it's important, though, when we're talking about the modern atheist movement, that there are certain associations that go with it. And I don't want to say that those things...
Well, definitely. It's made up of human beings.
Right.
And so,
yeah,
you know,
human beings one-dimensional?
No. Yeah. The moment that you have a community of human beings, what you have are people.
Right.
And people are not one-dimensional.
And so one of the things that we do talk about when we talk about the modern atheism movement is sort of skepticism and empiricism and sort of following the evidence and science, the scientific method, basically.
Unless you get into woo.
Well, yeah. And that's sort of something we've talked about in the show a lot, is that there's groups of people out there who don't believe in gods or gods, but they do believe in the supernatural stuff. Sort of the canonical example of that are the Raelians, who they don't believe that the universe was created by any specific deity, but they do believe in these almost supernatural aliens that exist on other planets who they expect to, you know, who they expect to visit them and then take them to whatever their private paradise is at the appropriate time.
Well, right. Within atheism, you can actually have any other thoughts as long as it doesn't involve believing in a god. You can have, you can run the gamut of being, you could be anti-science, really. We don't see that statistically in our community as much.
I've encountered a few examples of it, specifically among what I would say, you know, in like the anti-vax movement and stuff like that, where there's been sort of a turn away from the scientific method and the idea of peer review and situations like that in favor of basically anti-science thought.
And GMOs is another one.
GMOs is another great example of that.
Well, I think there's a lot of, you know, because atheists, the atheist community is such a large and diverse community, you get people who are obviously very pro-science, you get people that are very anti-science for whatever reason. And it's not really because they're good or bad atheists or anything like that. It's just that atheism doesn't inform any of their decisions on that. And
right.
Right. So if it doesn't have to do with God, then it doesn't actually matter.
It doesn't really.
It doesn't have anything to do with atheism so much.
And the other thing, too, is you could be an atheist or a humanist or a secularist for really bad reasons, and you could have kind of a warped worldview, and you just so happen to be
somebody who doesn't believe in God.
Who doesn't believe in God, but maybe your methodology isn't really stringent. You're not really a skeptic or a free thinker.
I guess a question I would ask there is, if we're sticking to the strict two-word definition of atheism, is there a bad reason to be an atheist?
God, no.
Yeah, God, no. And is there... I mean, speaking from in terms of humanism, which I'll get to in a minute, I don't think...
Well,
you know,
it could be a very uninformed,
okay,
you know, thing, right? Like, if you were just never, ever exposed to any sort of godlike claims, then you're going to be an atheist, but that has no... You could be taught all sorts of wacky other things.
Yeah. For example, there's the usual trope among religious people that atheist people hate God.
Or you could just hate your parents.
Or you could,
and
well,
just reject your parents and therefore their religion, but you don't really have like a solid foundation for what you're building your life,
well,
other than
them. If you're asking my personal opinion, I'd say, yeah, that's a poor reason to be an atheist. But is that necessarily a wrong reason to be an atheist?
I don't know.
That's not really a positive view. It's really hard to make a judgment on it or
but
anything.
The reason I'm saying this at all is because, based purely on my atheism says nothing about this
nothing.
Because it's only a description of one attribute.
Right.
Which is why I'm saying there's this usual trope among religious people that atheists hate God. But
right.
You'd have to believe in a God to hate it.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
Like, I hate Santa. Like,
well, and then you're almost getting into the what is often described as militant agnosticism, which is, I don't know, and you don't either.
Yeah.
So really, everybody's an atheist, whether they think so or not. They're just really deluded into thinking there's a God or something. You know, or you could get into those kind of arguments as well. So
right. And like I said, from a perspective of atheism, I don't know that's necessarily a good or bad thing.
Right.
But I do think it's a bad thing because of this other thing that we're here to talk about, and that's secular humanism. And is, you know, with these values, with the value set that I have adopted from secular humanism, yeah, I think the idea that I'm just being an atheist so that I can get back at my parents is a bad thing, because it's not a well-considered opinion. It's not an opinion.
It's poorly informed, and it doesn't really provide a framework for actions.
It's an opinion that isn't based on a view of the evidence or a view on history or human nature or anything like that. It's really just a stick-it-to-them opinion.
Well, and if it's a starting point, that's something. But without going further into it, then... But that's just the way anything is. If you start on a framework for yourself and you don't follow through with it, then it's an uninformed, you know, you're not putting your time into constructing the way you think.
Right. So let's talk about humanism for a little bit. And we have a very nice synopsis of the Humanist Manifesto 3 that Becca gave us before the show. And it's a very good list. So I'm just going to go from this. And the first point is... Knowledge of the world is derived by observation, experimentation, and rational analysis. And I think that's something that the modern atheist movement probably inherited from humanism, whether or not it believes itself to be humanist, is the idea that science and rational analysis...
The scientific method.
Yeah, the scientific method brings us a worldview that is... that appears to be truthful and works.
Yes, this is our basis for knowledge of the world.
And gives us
scientific method.
Yeah, and specifically gives us a framework for expanding our knowledge beyond what's already in the books, which I think is one of the most key aspects of a worldview based off of scientific analysis.
Right, and it also says that it's not just science for science's sake. It's saying that this greater understanding and knowledge through the methods of science can also provide other frameworks,
right?
Whether they're societal or moral frameworks, or other things, you can put some concrete in there from the scientific method.
Yeah,
and what's important about humanism and this bullet point specifically is this is providing a jumping off point for beginning to build a framework on which to think.
Right. And I think,
which is not what atheism provides.
Right. And it's also, I think, one of the most important points that sets it off from what is, you know, normally construed as a religion, is if you have a Bible, if you have a Quran, if you have, you know, if you have this holy book, the holy book is supposed to be the beginning and the end of what your worldview worldview is. I mean, you don't have to look very far in American culture and American politics to see denial of climate change because, you know, God promised Noah that he wouldn't flood the world again, or evolution can't be true because the world was created in 7 days.
Right.
And a framework based off of rational analysis is not...
It can always change.
It's not the end of the conversation. It's the beginning of the conversation.
Or the conversation itself. You know? Right. This is where we are. Here's some new evidence. Now we have to change our opinion because it doesn't fit within what we previously defined as what we were, where we were.
Right.
Absolutely. Now, the second bullet point you have here, which is one that we do talk about, but not nearly as much as perhaps we should, which is that humans are an integral part of nature.
I'm an animal.
Oh,
it turns out I eat and do other things.
We affect the planet?
Yeah.
What?
Well, the idea is that, I mean, especially in a lot of the, you know, popular religions, that humans are the image of the gods and are somehow apart from the environment that they exist in. That they were something that was inserted into the environment to be something exceptional, something above the environment. That in all of these religions, humanity is at the apex of some structure merely because God put us there. And where when we talk about human beings as being an integral part of nature, we are an emergent phenomenon from nature. We are not even the end result, but just a continuing result of natural selection and evolution.
Well, and right, and as we affect our environment changes and therefore affects us.
And we change in turn.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, for labeling this philosophy with humanism kind of sounds or suggests like humans are put on some sort of pedestal.
Right.
But this second point really kind of nullifies that and says this isn't necessarily glorify it in that way. It's just...
It really embraces humanity, and recognizing humanity as an integral part of nature is very important, actually understanding what human beings are. And so I really like that they would put this in here and make it sure to say humanism, right, isn't this glorification. We're being honest about what human beings are, and that is this part of nature.
Now, I have seen two arguments arise from this thing where humans are an integral part of nature. You have sort of an early survival of the fittest misinterpretation of natural selection that suggests that humanity is the apex of nature. It's emergent from nature, but we are the captains of it, where, you know, we are the obvious leaders of it. And
yeah, we definitely don't get affected by our environment.
Right. And then there's the other interpretation, which is generally what I subscribe to, which is we're just, like I said, an emergent phenomena from nature. We're not necessarily, we are not by any means,
although
the end result.
I would say on the first choice that you gave there, if you say that that humans are the apex of something, or that we're the captains, that also implies that we have some sort of responsibility or accountability though as well. And I think a lot of people
all I see now is
forget about that, right?
Going down with the ship.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like the captain is the one that goes down with the ship. He doesn't abandon it.
Because
like,
we're gonna run into an iceberg if we continue
on
this path.
And this is to differentiate us as I've said the word apex a couple times. This is to differentiate. We are apex predators. We tend to be at the top of the food chain, no matter where we are.
Right.
But that's different from, I think, what we're talking about, which is sort of a philosophical supremacy over the natural world, which is something that I don't necessarily believe.
Well, I think that's also a gross misunderstanding of evolution. And, you know, a lot of people think that evolution sort of has a certain direction that can only go positive, but it's really just selection pressure.
Right.
It can go in any way the environment is telling it to go.
The third point is an important one for me, which is ethical values are derived from human need and interest as tested by experience, which I think is important to me. So in most cases, ethics are handed down. Ethics are derived from morals. Morals are handed down by God in a list. Sometimes there's 10 of them. Sometimes there's 638 of them or whatever. But it's usually the idea of morality is something that's handed down externally from us, and that is not changeable and has nothing to do with how humans actually feel about things. It's a fixed, it's a chunk of concrete that we can't change.
And that's exactly not what I think at all about ethics. I think it's, you know, absolutely different from person to person. The way in which I derive my ethics with how I interact with you, Sam, is based upon who you are and what you think and how I interact with you. And the way that I would interact with Nathan is completely different because it's based upon the needs between the two of us and the human contract that you and I develop, as opposed to the type of human contract that I develop with other people. And so, yeah, I like this one a lot.
Yeah, and that's not necessarily even situational. I mean, there still are sort of, it's kind of an arbitrary choices that are made, like, hey, maybe we shouldn't kill other people, or, you know, we have to arbitrarily figure out
where we put our money, like in nonprofits and things like that. You know, these ethical choices that we are sitting there and evaluating every day are based upon this human need that perhaps, you know, maybe we'll never see those people, but the type of need that they have is so great that we respond to it.
Right. It's like, I don't think morality and ethics are fixed. I mean, morality, the way morality has dictated we treat women throughout history has shifted pretty significantly. But I do think that there may be some aspects of morality that will remain the same as long as we remain human beings. For example, most human beings, actually, I think every human being I've ever met doesn't want to be murdered.
Generally, yeah.
It depends, because if they're at the end of their life and they're asking for assistance for euthanasia or something like that,
I would not call that murder.
Okay.
I use murder very intentionally.
Oh, not killing, murder.
Ah,
against your will, non-consensual.
There you go. Against your, non-consensual murder, sure.
Right. Is, you know, people want to have
if I ever get to that point, I'm going to say murder me on purpose. Consensual murder.
But as long as we remain, you know... So I think, but murder is also related to that. We don't want to be debilitated.
Sure.
You know, which generally means we don't like pain, because pain is a...
Or how about we just say anything non-consensual?
Right.
Like any time you broach into, I don't consent to that, then you're broaching into non-ethical behavior.
Right. Sure. And I think that's a good summation of it, but how we arrive at what we mean by non-consensual, I mean, that's kind of what this isn't talking about here.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTF Pod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait, not sacrificing children, that's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down the issues too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTF Pod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-free football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com. I want to bring it back, but it's more than basic.
Billy! Not again!
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert!
Wow, that's so credible!
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you, and to give me your lunch money!
Aw, anything for family! Here you go!
Wait, Billy! Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence! Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp!
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
So the fourth point is life's fulfillment emerges from individual participation in the service of humane ideals. Anybody want to?
That's like
that one's flowery and nice. I like it.
Be a good person.
Well, you know, I like that they use the word service. I like that they, okay, so it says the service of humane ideals. That implies an action or something that you're doing. And so it's saying that human beings find fulfillment by doing things that are good, humane ideals. And so I like this one. I think it's interesting and flowery,
right,
in a way, but it, humanism is interesting and flowery. I would define myself as a humanist. I do find a lot of fulfillment in the service of humane ideals. I do a lot of things because of that, including, you know, donate money, donate time, these kinds of things. I put my energy and effort into it, and I feel like that is typically what you see in the humanist movement because of this specific bullet point here. Whether or not I think that every human being on the planet works that way, I don't think that they do.
Well, I think they chose, I think the writer...
But they wouldn't define themselves as humanists either.
Right. I think the Humanist Manifesto chooses the word humane here to be very specifically and very intentionally here, because we read humane ideals and our, you know, our brain, or at least my brain, tends to go towards charitable work or something, or, you know, some sort of socially positive work. But humane actually means non-harmful. So that leaves, and so I think you could actually say a person can, for example, amass personal wealth and personal power and do it in a way that it maintains itself as a humane ideal. That sure. This particular line does not actually prohibit selfish behavior. Mm. It perhaps may curtail certain types of selfish behavior, but it doesn't necessarily take it entirely out of the equation.
Oh, that's interesting. So what you read here is that people find fulfillment in doing non-harmful things.
Right. Oh. In doing...
So it's less of a go and do good, as and it's more of a...
Just don't do
don't
bad.
Don't do bad stuff.
Right.
Which, you got that exclusion in the
that
middle.
That's definitely humanism. Although I do think humanism, as far as community efforts, tends to... towards doing good.
Right, and I think that's most exemplified in the next bullet point, which is working to benefit society maximizes individual happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know there's a bunch of libertarians who are going to disagree with that. However, a lot of these libertarians...
Are not humanists?
No, they are, and they work together to what they believe to be social benefit.
Sure.
Because they work in the context of the Libertarian Party. They do things that they think will end, that they believe will end up with a positive result for most human beings. So even in that context, this doesn't necessarily fail that test.
Sure. And it's still, I guess, a follow-up for really having a good call to action.
Right.
So it's not just a, here's some list of some things and, you know, the chair has four legs and a thing, and it's just some description of some object, and this is more of a positive value, and that's what makes humanism a positive
form of atheism. Well, it makes assertive claims.
Right.
You're right. This call to action that you're speaking of, that's something atheism doesn't have. No God.
Right.
That doesn't have anything going for it, but humanism specifically is like, hey, get up and do something good.
Right. And that's, and like I said, when we're talking about what in humanism drives, you know, the sort of the idea in humanism that drives me to work in the community and stuff like that, it's really this one, where the previous one is more about sort of avoiding causing harm to other people and, well,
sure,
the world. The next one is, humans are social by nature and find meaning in relationships.
Yes, humanism does have a community feel to it.
Right.
Like interacting with other people, helping other people, coming together to do the most good you possibly can. These are all values of humanism. But, you know, even just getting together for coffee is something you'll find the humanists doing because of this value here. It's not just get together and act and act and act. It's just get together.
Right.
See people face to face, interact.
And it's, you know, to be a better humanist, I think it's really good to have a good view of what humans are.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, we're all on this spaceship together. kind of on this little island, and so there's not a lot of places we can go, at least right now. Well, and so we're kind of in it together.
And pulling back in the first bullet point here, in which we were talking about scientific method, this really derives from observation of human beings and what drives humanity and when humans are at their best and when they're at their happiest. And what you'll find is whenever they have a sense of community, they typically statistically feel happier and do better.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm someone who will go through significant phases of just sort of avoiding social anything. Like, I've had my years of being a shut-in, and this doesn't negate that, because even though I was not, you know, participating in, you know, larger social constructs, I still had those people who were important to me in my environment, who I would talk to and who I would, you know, I would be harmed by their absence. And I think we're all kind of like that. And even in those situations, I mean, I'd still be on the internet sometimes, so I was still communicating with people. Mm-hmm. It's like, sure, we do need to communicate. That's fairly well established. Mm-hmm. So the next one is: humanists are concerned for the well-being of all, are committed to diversity, and respect those of differing yet humane views.
Is now, that humane again?
This is interesting, because this is, like, all the previous ones, all the previous points, bullet points on this one, could count for people who would not identify as humanists, or who would not be humanists by the humanist definition. Where this is the first one where it stops talking about humans and starts talking about humanists. And I think that's really important, because it shows that this is a philosophy that is based on observation combined with sort of a hope for the kind of world that a humanist would want to live in.
Mm, it's a projection of what humanists hope to gain through humanism.
Right.
Yeah. And it's a great one, isn't it? I really like this one. I mean, you know, concern for the well-being of all. Yeah. That pulls back in for caring about human need and, you know, building ethical values and, you know, why are we doing all of that? Well, because we want to make it a good place for everyone. And by saying everyone, we don't just mean humanists. That's why diversity and everything like that is brought in. But very specifically, though, it says respect those of differing yet humane views, because right, humanists aren't going to sit there and say, hey, you are a harmful person, but we're humanists, so we just accept that. Hooray for life. You know, it's just like, no, humanists are going to call out harmful views, because that's damaging to the human beings they care about.
The idea, there is sort of a concept in society of humanists being somebody, a person who just doesn't fight or doesn't have disagreement or just kind of wants to get along, much in the same way that Unitarian Universalists also have that.
Well, they do want that, but they want it without lies built in or right, just like sweeping things under the carpet. Whenever it comes to harmful views, they're not going to accept that.
Well, now there are people in this world that I have no real interest in getting along with, because they've adopted and they've taken to heart certain philosophies that cause massive amounts of harm, and they show no.
Doesn't make you not a humanist, Sam.
That's precisely my point. Is
yes,
there is lots of space to be the angry jackass that I am within the concept of humanism. I mean,
good,
it even
good
allows
humanism, Sam.
Right. There's even room for my, you know,
humanism. You can be an angry jackass.
You can.
It's a bumper
sticker. You can be a misanthropic angry jackass. Even it's like I go through phases of misanthropy. I mean, you've heard a ton of them if you've been listening to Ask an Atheist for any longer than 10 minutes. But I mean, honestly, I do think in the end, this is the source of my optimism. I may hate how humanity is acting right now, but that doesn't mean that I think that better things are in store if we work together.
Right, and diversity really is not so much about the sort of flowery inclusiveness. It's really embracing this inclusive, because it provides perspective and it provides other points of view and it provides more information that can feed that scientific method.
Right.
And you can, you know, the more outside purviews that you get and can identify the good ones and the bad ones, or the humane ones and the less so, you can really develop a very robust social system around that.
Right. And the way that manifests for me is that I've always looked for something that I've called parallax, and people don't necessarily know what that means. I mean, it's a phrase from optics, but it's also, if you're a computer programmer,
yeah,
parallax scrolling is an obvious thing. But what it means to me in this context is when I have a position on something or when I feel strongly about something, I'm not really ready to like totally rock it or go out there and throw it out there as something that I feel very strongly about until there's somebody in my environment who's at a point away from me. And between us, we get a sense of perspective.
Sure.
And I think perspective allows a greater understanding of the issue, and more meaning to the point. Even if the person way over there who thinks differently than I do, I believe is completely wrong and may in fact be a jackass. But I still need that sort of external point to me so that I can actually meaningfully talk about this thing that I talk about. And this does tend to make me go out and hear and talk. This is actually part of where my huge propaganda collection comes from. It's like, yeah, it's funny and I laugh and it's creepy and whatever. But the idea, the reason I have it, didn't start there. It's because I wanted to know what all these religious people were saying so that I could get a sense of the spectrum that I was existing in when I went out there and said, all this religious stuff is crap. It's like I can't really say that meaningfully unless I have the entire horizon within view. That makes sense?
Oh, yeah.
Makes sense to me.
All right. And the final point, the responsibility for our lives and the kind of world in which we live in is ours and ours alone.
You mean the dolphins aren't going to take care of climate change?
No, they'll thank us.
Weird.
They'll thank us for fish and split.
Yeah.
This is pretty self-explanatory, and I really like it a lot, is taking ownership and responsibility for the types of changes in which we can make. Especially, there's a lot of focus in here on making positive change in the world, making positive
right.
change within relationships, making positive change within your environment, within culture, within people, within community.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is we're not going to get a better world if we don't work for it.
Absolutely.
And the only people who can change our world for the better are really us. And there's no deity out there who's going to be changing it for us.
You mean I can't have my cake and eat it too?
You can have part of your cake and you can eat the other part.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got to work for it. I got to do the dishes. Yeah.
No one's going to save us.
Nobody's going to buy that cake for you.
Yeah.
No, I'm just
And this wraps around, I didn't really think about directly connecting it to humanism very much in a 2013 article I wrote about my depression. But what I wrote in that article was the responsibility of taking personal responsibility for the fact that my emotions don't function in a way that I would consider proper, and putting one step in front of the other, basically saying, my emotions here suck. I need to focus on getting stuff done. I need to put my life together. That's a huge responsibility for somebody who's feeling like there is literally nothing. Like, there's literally nothing I can do. I am powerless, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then realizing that nobody's going to come up and fix this for me, that I have to do it myself, is literally the responsibility that leads to joy. It starts with one can say, oh, you have to be responsible for yourself, and da da da. And that sounds like a really dark thing when you're kind of in the middle of a depressive episode. It sounds like getting further on yourself, but it's distinct from just heaping more personal insult on, because it's the thing that gets me out of bed. It's the thing that makes me put on my shoes. It's the thing that gets me into the office. And crap, Sam, can you at least write 3 lines of code today? Can you do this? And it starts a process where at the end of it, it's like, wait, I'm accomplishing something. I'm not useless. I'm not bad at this when I put my mind to it. And it's the responsibility that leads to joy. And I think this is why this is almost the most important point about why I identify as a humanist, because this is that encapsulated in a worldview that says we have to get out of bed and we have to do it ourselves because nobody's coming to do it for us.
Right.
Not just because they won't, but because really they can't.
Well,
we have to do it.
So I'm going to jump off the far deep end here. So this perfectly goes with a thought that I love having. I love having this thought. I don't know if it makes me narcissistic or I don't know. It doesn't really matter. But I love thinking myself as the god of me. I love that thought. I'm like, nobody else is going to be able to control me. Like, nobody else, like, all my problems, who's going to fix that? Me. Yeah. Right? And so thinking of myself as the god of me makes it much easier for me to do things in life, because if I'm laying on the ground and I'm like, I'm so depressed, I can't even move. But if I remember, oh, wait, I'm the god of me, I can tell myself I can move. Then I get up and I'm like, look at me go. Right? And I feel like a god.
It's funny.
Because I am the god of Rebecca.
It's
hello.
Really funny because it gets so close to that usual trope about atheists and humanists. That, you know, it says, oh, yeah, they just take God away and replace themselves. But it's not the same at all, because you're not, again, because we're
what? No, I'm not worshiping myself. I don't think I'm a deity. I just think, oh, Rebecca's the only thing that can do anything about Rebecca. Oh, okay. Now
yeah,
I know.
And that works. And, yeah. You know, they
I don't think I'm a real god. I don't think that I have magic powers or anything like that. Other than, like, look, I can move my arms. Look at this. I'm controlling this. Woo! I'm swaying my arms back and forth, guys.
Yeah. That is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at that. Oh, I can control. Oh, look at these fingers. So amazing.
And so the interesting thing is there is a document that incorporates all this stuff into a single concept, and it's called the Humanist Manifesto. And the most interesting thing about it is that it's the Humanist Manifesto, version 3. And
it's almost like they embrace the scientific method and have versioning.
Yeah.
And, like, new evidence and new thought will, like, change your answer or
you
something.
You mean they don't just change the original document and pretend it didn't exist?
Yeah.
Oh, so it's not like Mormonism.
Well, there's some of it in the original Humanist Manifesto that I still like, because, you know, the whole socialism thing. Yeah, that's kind of me.
Right.
But also, there in the earlier, you know, in a lot of the earlier discussion with about humanism, there was actually a specific denial of state atheism. And state atheism is the kind of political philosophy that you saw in the Soviet Union, that you see to a certain extent in China right now, and it's the thing that a lot of, you know, Christian weirdos will say, well, it's just as bad there, so you're just as bad as we are, so yeah. But in humanist discussion, state atheism is really just as bad as theocracy, because it is not entered into by free choice. It's not done by discussion. It's not done by an invitation. It's done by basically indoctrination and military force. And it's a very different
right.
thing.
And its ideals are not derived from the masses. They're derived from something else and pushed down. It's not informed by the diversity of humans and making positive change socially and all those things.
Right. And it's atheism in the service of another philosophy, a philosophy that cannot, specifically in terms of Stalinist governments, it's a philosophy that is invariant. It is a philosophy that does not change, which means that in this case, atheism becomes dogma. And this is why another thing that I say often on the show, which I haven't said in a long time, which is, religion is the armor that dogma wears. That in a lot of ways, we aren't really fighting religious people and religion and all of that stuff. It's really the concept of dogma that causes a lot of the social ills. It just so happens that the strongest and most effective purveyor of dogma in the 21st century world is religion. But
sure.
This, you know, the Stalinist governments give us a very good example of governments that are of a context where the purveyors of dogma are not religious. And in those situations, I'm not on the side of the atheists. My humanism disallows it.
Right. And when you're talking about dogma and all those things, you get into, especially in context of humanism, you know, and certainly we're reading off of the secular humanism manifesto.
Yeah.
But you can get humanists that are religious. And I have a lot more in common with somebody who's a non-secular humanist than I do with somebody who's an atheist and not a humanist.
Right.
I mean,
absolutely.
There's people who happen to be religious, but in all other forms of their life, they're going to act upon a very similar moral framework.
It's the assertive claims. Atheism is not an assertive claim. Like, it's no God, but humanism, it says, here are all these ways in which I think. And so somebody who has a similar way in which they think is going to be closer to you than somebody who isn't thinking in the same manner and doesn't have the same framework as you do.
Absolutely. It's the difference between, it's in debate when I'm challenged for changing my viewpoint in the middle of a conversation because new data has arrived and now my position has changed. It's the difference between winning and getting it right. I don't want to win. I want to get it
right. Yeah, what are you winning?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Oh boy, another trophy. Yeah, it's that's not interesting to me. I want to get it right.
Hooray, I pushed the wrong idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, if somebody has some information for me, mm-hmm. If they think that I'm wrong about something, I want to know what that is,
because
I want to fix that so that I'm not wrong going forward.
And I think it's the difference between winning and get it right, which is entirely what leads to the fact that we are now dealing with the Humanist Manifesto version 3.
Right.
Versus just making the first version from the 30s work like a cudgel. And I think that's an incredibly important aspect of what continues to make humanism work for me as I learn.
It evolves.
Yeah. It evolves. So yeah, we've talked about in an earlier episode about what makes an atheist, and I'm pretty sure I'd say, you know, it doesn't say a lot, but in here, if you want to hear me talk about what I do believe, this is it. This is Ask an Atheist. 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you.
And that's the end of this podcast. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. You can voicemail us at 844-753-7842. That's 844-SKEPTIC. You can visit us on Twitter on AskAnAtheistWA. This episode was pre-recorded. Thank you guys very much. See you next week.